It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Emotions are running high this morning. I got to admit, guys, I'm a little down. You know, the Colts did not do what they were supposed to do, but this is
you
the time.
You're down.
These next 2 hours.
I
don't even want to know what your Twitter mentions look like last night.
They're bad. I sent out a tweet. If they win, my mentions are open. If they lose, unfortunately, Twitter automatically turns my mentions.
Oh, yeah? Is that how it works?
You should have seen the group chat.
I can only imagine. Yeah. Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark, I'm Charlie Arnold. First take for the next 2 hours. We have a lot to get to, but first, guys, let's get to some breaking news. Now, we have several coaches who are already out. A trio of them have been fired, according to our Adam Schefter. Now, the Bears have fired Matt Nagy. The Vikings have fired Mike Zimmer. The Dolphins have fired Brian Flores. Also, it is being reported that Chicago's GM Ryan Pace and Minnesota's GM Rick Spielman are also out of their respective roles. So, with that, let's welcome in ESPN's NFL insider, Adam Schefter. So, Adam, let's start with the news of Brian Flores, because this one has a lot of people scratching their heads. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, I think that there are some dynamics behind the scenes that made this one go down the way it did this morning. And I think the Dolphins were not pleased with the results of the season. I think Brian Flores was looking to make changes on the coaching staff that obviously others in the organization, I don't believe, agreed with. And so I think there was some disagreement over which coaches to keep and which coaches to move on from. I think there was discussions there. I think there were discussions about how power would be shared. And look, the fact of the matter is I think Brian Flores knows he's in a great position, because if the Miami Dolphins don't want him, I can assure you that another team that has an opening or will have an opening certainly would be interested. We could go down the line and think, where would Brian Flores be a fit other than basically anywhere? Would he fit in Chicago with the culture there? I would say yes. Would he fit in Houston potentially if the Texans decide to make a change with their former Patriots general manager Nick Caserio, Jack Easterby? Would Brian Flores fit there? I would say yes. Would he fit in Denver? Yeah. I mean, you could just go down the list and he would fit anywhere. So I would expect Brian Flores to be interviewed and potentially even hired during this next hiring cycle. Not hard to imagine all that. The Dolphins felt like they needed to go a different direction. Their general manager, Chris Greer, is safe. He'll help lead this search with Tom Garfinkel, the team president, Stephen Ross. A lot of people have wondered, whoa, Dolphins clearing space for Jim Harbaugh, the Michigan coach. As Jeff Darlington reported, that's not the plan. Steve Ross is not interested in poaching Jim Harbaugh from the University of Michigan, taking that head coach from the school that he loves. So don't look at that as a possibility right now. But we knew that this would be a busy morning, but perhaps it was a little bit busier than people expected in a concentrated period of time, with the Miami Dolphins leading the way, making a change that a lot of people didn't see coming, moving on from Brian Flores, the head coach, allowing him essentially to go be a coaching free agent, where I would think he's going to get a lot of interest. Dolphins now going to their own head coaching search. And then in the NFC North, we've seen clean sweeps of the front offices and coaching staffs, where the Bears move on from Matt Nagy and their general manager, Ryan Pace, and the Vikings move on from their head coach, Mike Zimmer, and their general manager, Rick Spielman.
Okay, yeah, let's focus in on Chicago, Adam, because this didn't come as a surprise to many people. This has been being talked about for months. So as far as Matt Nagy is concerned, when exactly did the Bears come to this ultimate decision?
Look, I think the writing has been on the wall for weeks now, and we can go back to whatever point you want. It seems like the Bears wanted to make a change. The fans wanted a change. I think really the more interesting question there was, were they going to make it a clean sweep and include the general manager, Ryan Pace, in their changes, or were they just going to make it the head coach? And the Bears felt like they had seen enough, where Ryan Pace had been in a draft where he had a chance to go draft a quarterback, and people always remember that he took Mitchell Trubisky ahead, of course, of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. They went ahead and traded up for Justin Fields. We'll see how that works out over time. Jury's still out there. But I think Ryan Pace has had the opportunity to hire other head coaches and get it right. And the Bears felt like they didn't want to give him that opportunity again. Matt Nagy, no surprise there. Everybody in Chicago was expecting it. And maybe it might have come even sooner. There was that report the week of Thanksgiving that Nagy would be fired the day after their Thanksgiving game at Detroit, which, of course, he wasn't. But there had been so much talk dating back to then that after a while, honestly, it's almost like a person is better to be put out of his misery because it really becomes stressful and taxing on the individual and his family as well. And I think people need to remember that. The families are involved in these firings. And we go from the games on Sunday, 272 games this season, the incredible finish on Sunday night, to a Monday where there are livelihoods and families that learn their fates. And it's a very personal day for a lot of people. And we hear all the firings and all the moves and wondering where everybody's going. But there's a personal component to this as well. But I think the big move in Chicago was the Bears moving on from their general manager, Ryan Pace, and saying we're going to really start anew here with the Bears.
Well, staying in the division, and they're also starting anew. We look at the Minnesota Vikings. They decided to move on from Mike Zimmer. He was also fired along with their team GM, Rick Spielman. So, Adam, it looks like the Vikings also seem to be signaling a complete regime change here.
And I think, again, zero surprise that Mike Zimmer, after eight seasons in Minnesota, was let go. Obviously, it was a situation where most people felt like the time had come to move on from him. The surprise in Minnesota was that the Vikings moved on from their general manager, Rick Spielman, a longtime respected member of that organization. And Rick Spielman even had been doing legwork, making calls on head coaching candidates last week, making plans for the organization going forward. And without speaking to him today, my sense and guess would be that Rick Spielman was quite surprised to get the news that he was going to be a part of these changes in Minnesota because he had plans to help move the organization forward and find the right head coach in the future, and he's not going to get that opportunity with Minnesota basically duplicating a play from Chicago's playbook and changing out its head coach and its general manager.
All right, well, look like a few teams looking to start from scratch right now. Adam, thank you so very much. We'll see you in just a bit for even more updates.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys, a lot to react to here. Ryan, let's start with you here. I think the big surprise was Brian Flores being out with the Dolphins. What's your reaction to this?
Yeah, this seems like a mistake to me. Like, this is a guy who has kept his team competitive throughout the three seasons he's been there. You look at what he was able to do moving from Fitz to Tua Tagovailoa, also using him in duplicate ways or using them as a duo last year and now finding ways to win 8 out of 9 games as you finish the season. And as Dan mentioned, even on Get Up, you beat the New England Patriots 2 times this year. Yeah. This is a team that's continued to have the identity of playing great defense, and he's a defensive coach. This is a team that has learned to play offense, even with an offensive line that wasn't the type of offensive line you thought could protect a young quarterback or have you an opportunity or give you an opportunity to have a run game. And so when I see a leader like this who is ousted as a head coach, it makes me feel like they don't have the right executives or the right leadership at the top of the organization to understand what they're getting. And the huge question for me is this. Okay, you get rid of Brian Flores. Who are you going to get to replace him? And how is that an upgrade over the head coach you just had?
I think it's a mistake and I think it's ridiculous. This is a coach that's 19-14 in his last two seasons. The NFL is a what have you done for me lately results-driven league.
Yep.
We see a lot of really good men and people and coaches get fired. And sometimes we sit here and we go, you just didn't get it done.
It's ball.
Results are what they're 19-14. All right, so you mentioned they beat New England twice this year. They've beaten New England 3 out of the last 4 times. And this, for me, feels a lot like what Detroit did to Jim Caldwell when I was there. And when they fired Coach Caldwell, we thought that's a mistake. Because Coach Caldwell had built good teams. But the organization was like, we want great teams. We want better. We want to take the next step. Yeah. And now Detroit, I think, is encouraged by Dan Campbell. But over the past 4 years, they've been like, a laughingstock.
Yep.
So for me, it feels like, what's the reasoning? What's the justification? Because the results were there. Mm-hmm. The culture was good, at least trending in that direction. And your players always tell you what they think of a coach by the style and, and the way they play.
Yeah.
I've been on bad teams, unfortunately, right? They're 1-7. 2 weeks ago, this team was playing for a chance to get into playoffs.
Yep.
You don't think that the coach has a grasp of the locker room, a feel to get his guys to play the right way?
Yeah.
And, I just don't understand how two winning seasons in a row.
They've won 8 of their last 9.
Yeah. Correct.
So what could the justification possibly be? I mean, you even saw Tua let yesterday.
Here's what happens. These teams feel like they're on the cusp, and they don't understand how they got there. They're not giving Brian Flores the respect for building this team and putting it in a position to be one game away from getting into the playoffs. playoffs, what they're looking at is the result of not winning that game 2 weeks ago and saying, okay, at the beginning of the season, we expect it to be something different. But I also don't think they realized that in the middle of the season, you were linked to Deshaun Watson and trade rumors. Yeah. So not only did Brian Flores have to prepare a team to win football games, right, he also had to manage a young quarterback and the things that he was hearing.
And he did a great job of doing that.
Absolutely.
Always stood behind Tua.
Absolutely. And I don't understand when, again, if we look at results, the results were there. We look at the development of the culture. The culture was there. The Patriots needed to win yesterday as well.
Yes.
It wasn't like the Patriots mailed it in, and you beat them handily at home. I would sit here and say this. If they had kept Brian Flores and had made one more move on the offensive line, I would have pegged this team throughout this offseason as a team that was going to be a playoff football team heading into next year. Now I think you got giant questions at the head coaching position. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say Chris Greer, there's questions there because there's been some moves that have been questionable when it comes to the addition of the talent. You're the person who picked all the offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You're the person who attached your football team to Deshaun Watson. And now this is going to, again, bring questions to Tua. Is Tua the guy there next year? Or what are they going to do with him? I just think it's a mistake.
And it's extremely hard to fire a man who, at least seemingly from the outside, kept his team engaged no matter what the record said.
Right.
Right. And no matter what decision he made, when he was subbing in Ryan Fitzpatrick as almost a reliever for Tua Tagovailoa, not only was Tua on board, not only was Ryan Fitzpatrick on board, but the team understood it. It always seemed that every decision that he made was about winning and that the team knew that he was singularly focused on that, and that's what drove every decision that he made.
Yeah, definitely a lot of cohesion with the Dolphins. So very surprising, I think, for everyone to see Brian Flores out this morning. But look, we look at Chicago, Matt Nagy, him being fired. That comes as a surprise to nobody. That's being talked about for weeks. So, Dan, what's your reaction to them finally making the decision to not only move on from Nagy, but also the GM?
Failure to have the vision to understand that Justin Fields and his development was the most important thing this year.
Mm-hmm.
Failure to actually do that.
Yeah.
That's why both of these men got fired. You moved up to go get Justin Fields, and then you don't play him. And then when you do play him, there's not a significant amount of development in what is he good at? What does he thrive in? Mm. What are the things that we don't do? And I said it in week one when they rolled out with that game plan against the Cleveland Browns. It was a joke.
Yeah.
And that showed me either an intentional thing or an incompetence thing. I wish Matt Nagy nothing but the best. And hopefully he lands on his feet with the same with Ryan Pace. This is not that great of a job, candidly, because while you have a superstar talent at quarterback, you're decimated with picks because of that decision to go get him, and the roster's not that healthy, and that defense is getting older.
Well, the big thing to me is if you're Ryan Pace, you make the draft pick of Mitchell Trubisky, you bring in Matt Nagy to develop him, and that's a failure, right? So that's a strike against Matt Nagy and also the GM, Ryan Pace. Now you move up to draft Justin Fields. One, you don't start him right away, and then when he does get the opportunity to start, there is no plan in place to take advantage of the things that he can do well.
100%.
Right? We don't use his legs. We don't have the quarterback run. We don't put him in situations to where we could see the arm talent from a position of success.
Right.
And so when you have those things happening, this was a foregone conclusion. You know, many people thought it would happen earlier, but I think we all expected after the season ended yesterday that this would be a move the Chicago Bears would make.
Yeah, I think at the very beginning of the season, once they decided not to start Justin Fields, I think everybody was already looking at the head coach, you know, asking what are you doing? Okay, guys, we have a lot more to get to. So let's move on to some of the crazy endings that we had yesterday. It was truly outrageous. The regular season is over. And, guys, it literally took until the final 2 seconds to get the playoff picture set. Unbelievable. So let's start with that final game, Chargers-Raiders, where a tie would have sent both teams to the playoffs. And it looked like it was headed in that direction. Game tied at 32 in overtime. Raiders possession. Chargers head coach Brandon Staley decided to call a timeout with 30 seconds left, disallowing Josh Jacobs time to run the ball, setting up for a 47-yard Daniel Carlson field goal, and Raiders win. But what's everybody talking about today?
Was there any consideration to just running down the clock there and not even attempting a field goal?
It was conversation we were talking about. You know, I don't know if you know, we ran the ball there, and they didn't call a timeout. So I think they were probably thinking the same thing, you know, and then we had the big run to there, and when we got the big run, it got us, we thought it was advantageous field goal position for us. We were going to take the field goal and try to win it. But we were certainly talking about it on the sideline. We wanted to see if they were going to call a timeout or not on that run. They didn't, so we thought they were thinking the same thing. And then we popped the run in there and gave us a chance to kick the field goal to win it. So we were certainly talking about it.
Yeah, we needed to get in the right grouping. We felt like they were going to run the ball, so we wanted to get our best 11 personnel run defense in, make that substitution so that we could, you know, get a play where we would deepen the field goal.
Okay, well, he says he wanted to switch out the defense, but Dan, did Brandon Staley cost the Chargers of the game by calling that very, very late timeout?
He did. I think that timeout, once you hear, and I had not heard Coach Bisaccia's comments until this morning. Yeah. Once you hear him answer that question, not only the fact that he says, yes, they were thinking about it, but how quickly he says it.
Yeah.
You know, he was anticipating, yep, we were definitely thinking about it, having that conversation. You remember, we had run the ball, and they didn't call a timeout. So it became very clear to me after hearing not only, again, what he said, but how he said it, that this team was going to be content with figuring out a way to do what was necessary, and that was to find a way to get into the playoffs. I don't think that they would. Maybe they attempt a 55-yard field goal, but my guess
they
is
do.
They run the football and then punt it away.
Yeah. You're still
punt
in.
It away,
what's the matter?
And they're going to go tie. And so I think Brandon Staley, while I guess like situationally it's justified to go, well, I wanted to get in the right run grouping, just the feel of what was going on in that football game, the timeout wasn't worth what potentially could be set off. And that was the Raiders regrouping. Now they call another run play, but they hit on that run play because of the run grouping change, and then they had the chance to kick the field goal. I think Brandon Staley's a really good head coach. I do. I think I'm a fan of his. I'm a fan of the way he thinks. I think he's got a brilliant football mind. He is the reason that this football team does not make the playoffs. And he's the reason that we don't get to see Justin Herbert in some of the stupid stuff that he did last night.
I'm talking about stupid.
In the playoffs. So, yeah, I think that timeout cost him.
You know what? Obviously, the timeout cost him to me. But I also think going for it on fourth down, backed up in your own area, is the issue to me, right? Brandon Staley has started to focus on these fourth downs as if all fourth and ones are created the same, but they aren't, right? If you're in the opponent's red zone, or if you're on the opponent's side of the football field, or if you're trying to ice a game and win it, that makes sense to me.
Right.
But just because you feel like you can gain 1 yard doesn't mean that you should always try. I feel like Brandon Staley has fallen in love with the perception of aggression, but not the success of it, right? He's fallen in love with saying, you know what, this is the type of coach I am. So no matter when I make these decisions, the perception from the outside, right, and the rhetoric from the outside is going to be, well, that's who Brandon Staley is. Brandon Staley, your job isn't to be aggressive. Your job is to win football games, right? And when you have the Kansas City Chiefs on the ropes and you're playing them in your own stadium and you go for fourth downs when you don't have opportunities to make it, or you don't take the fourth downs and look at everyone individually, right, and you say, this is who I'm going to be, and you lose that football game because Patrick Mahomes plays well late, right? And then you play against the Houston Texans, a team, to their credit, that has fought down the stretch, but you give up 41 points to that team, and you're a defensive coordinator, right? And you lose that game. And now you come into this game against the Las Vegas Raiders, and your aggression puts your team at a deficit. This entire failure is on Brandon Staley. And you are right. When you look at some of the things that Justin Herbert was able to do on the 18-play drive, right, in the overtime, he truly kept this team closer, or got this team back in the game that I felt like Brandon Staley had coached him out of.
I think two things. First of all, I think there's a difference between reckless and aggressive.
Yep.
And I do think them being backed up on that fourth and one was reckless more than aggressive. Mm. I also would love for them to incorporate in that situation, like if they had run quarterback zone read, right? Shotgun zone read. We saw the Raiders do it with Mariota.
Right.
If I had seen that from Justin Herbert, I think I would feel a little bit better.
But haven't we talked about that the entire season?
Right. Why is that not part of
why is that not a part of what they do?
Yeah, I think if they had done that, I would have felt a little bit less. I mean, you turn around and just hand the ball into the A gap against the defensive line that had been beaten up pretty good.
And also, too, no disrespect to Austin Ekeler. That's not his thing.
That's not his game, just that power.
That's not his thing.
That's a good point.
You know,
I just think, like, I think Brandon Staley, again, coaching in the NFL is incredibly difficult, and I think the really good coaches are the ones that constantly learn. There is no such thing as a loss or failure. It's learning. He's got to learn that while Justin Herbert's remarkable, and he bails you out of so much stuff because those fourth down aggressive calls he makes happen, you got to do what's best for the football team. I think it is a good point.
And my biggest thing, and I know we have to go, Charlie, is when you start a season or when you become a head coach, you have this perception or you have this ideal in mind. This is who I'm going to be. But that also has to be able to be adjusted.
Yeah.
Because if you have a plan that can't be adjusted, that's a bad play.
If Mike McCarthy, candidly, if Mike McCarthy had made those decisions last night, he would be getting absolutely crucified this morning. Yeah. So I think it's fair to question Staley's kind of decision-making in those moments.
Well, it's unbelievable because they would be in the playoffs. Both teams would be in the playoffs.
But you know why they know who is, though, Charlie? Hey, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You know what the craziest part is? The Steelers would not have been in should last night's game have ended in a tie. Everything that we thought could have happened. It was just unbelievable. Okay, so let's look at the playoff field. It is set. So let's take a look at the wild card matchups in the AFC, this dancing. You look like Mike Tomlin. Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike Tomlin, IG Live dance?
IG Live.
Okay. The Raiders and Bengals will kick things off on Saturday afternoon, followed by a divisional matchup between the Bills and Patriots. Those teams split their two regular season meetings. And on Sunday, the Steelers will head to Arrowhead as they look to avenge their Week 16 loss to the Chiefs. Yesterday, Pittsburgh's game also went to OT against the Ravens, where Big Ben was able to make a huge play to keep their season alive.
We just like to stress people out early. All you guys and all our fans at home, you know, you guys have asked me a million times, those of you that are in Pittsburgh, you know, why, what's the issue? I don't know, but, you know, it'd be nice to figure it out now.
You know, that's been our story all year, man. You guys buried us when we were 1-3, you know? Man, we got a lot of warts. But we're here, and that's been our position since September. And so I'm just appreciative of that mental fortitude being displayed by those men in that locker room.
Yeah, and Mike Tomlin, usually a very serious guy. Last night he was going off on IG Live. He was dancing. He was loving it. So final score is 16-13 there. Ryan.
Well, he's
shocked to see the Steelers in the postseason?
Well, I'm not. And he's basically talking to guys like Dan Orlowski. Dan Orlowski buried the Pittsburgh Steelers early, and he was all, oh, look at the Colts. We love the Colts. Guess what? The Colts are at home, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are in the playoffs.
Can you not? Because you know I'm from Indianapolis, too, right? I would appreciate it.
Oh, 3 hours right now.
Relax a little bit.
I'm so sorry. I'm not going to relax, though.
Say
no. You know what? I'm not surprised about what the Pittsburgh Steelers done. Obviously, you're surprised about the things that happened to the other teams that allowed the Pittsburgh Steelers to get in, right? But when you look at this team, you were able to beat the Ravens twice coming down the stretch. You beat the Tennessee Titans in a game you truly should not have won, and you beat the Cleveland Browns. Like, this was the team that found ways to win football games, quite frankly, that they weren't supposed to. Like, this is kind of a microcosm of what Mike Tomlin has been as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, is that they're going to grind and find a way to win football games that we don't believe they should. You can think back to a few years ago when you had Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph as the quarterbacks, and this team found a way to finish at 500. Yesterday, they made play after play in critical football moments to win the game. The Baltimore Ravens outplayed the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Baltimore Ravens were able to rush the football, but Pittsburgh Steelers make an interception in the end zone, right, to take points off of the board. Ben Roethlisberger found ways to make enough throws to win, to get first downs and allow Broswell to kick a field goal. And so when you look at all of these different things.
And the defense, T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt's defensive player of the year. Like, he absolutely showed up in critical moments, not only against the Baltimore Ravens, but also against the Cleveland Browns, getting 4 sacks to close that edge or to close that race with Michael Strahan. When you look at this team, do I think they're going to win this week? Hell no. And it's also not important. What's important is that But when you look at this team and the opportunities that were presented to them to win football games, they won those games and they were not expected.
Are you shocked the Steelers got in?
I just told you I'm not shocked by what they did. I am shocked that Carson Wentz and the Indianapolis Colts were so trash
that they even had
that they went down to Jacksonville and lost. Dan, I'm not supposed to be working today. If Stephen A. was able to come into work, I was supposed to take off because I bet my Monday job on the Indianapolis Colts.
I wish you didn't come.
You know what?
I wish you weren't here.
You know what you should have wished? That Carson Wentz didn't go.
Geez.
That's what you should have wished. You know why? Because he let you down, Dan.
He let us all down. He did.
Is
Carson Wentz exactly who we thought he was?
We're going to get to the Colts, okay? We're going to have plenty of time to get to the Colts.
Are we? We're done.
Carson Wentz, I'm done at 10:30. Shocked the Steelers got in. I'm absolutely shocked. I will give them their flowers. I think Mike Tomlin literally was talking to me when he said you guys wrote us off when you were 1-3. I've got to give them credit. I think it's the greatest coaching job by Mike Tomlin in the history of his career. Which says a lot because he's been phenomenal over 15 years. I think it's the example of what a championship organization is, that even though you don't have a good team, you're good enough. to get into the playoffs. Yes, with some help. If you go back to week one, we talked about this, RC. This team played on the road against the Buffalo Bills.
Yep.
They played phenomenal defense, a couple turnovers,
yep.
and then Big Ben was clutch at the end. And we kind of said, like, that's going to be the way that they got to play. Really good defense. Let the Hall of Famer be clutch at the end. And I think that game was a microcosm of the season. And certainly yesterday's game was just another example of that. Really good defense. Pop a couple turnovers. And I've got to give Ben credit because Ben had some rough moments this year. I remember having conversations in the group text being like, this is a tough watch. He was clutch. Again,
was,
plenty
yeah.
of third downs in the fourth quarter and overtime. And then a fourth quarter or a fourth, an overtime fourth down.
Yeah.
to really win the game. So I'm shocked that they got it. Listen, there's only one team in the NFL that had less snaps this season with the lead other than the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the Houston Texans. This is not a very good football team.
It's not.
But they're good enough to get in, and I got to give them credit for that.
Wow. You know who's not good enough to get in, Charlie?
Not.
The Indianapolis
Colts. Listen, I know we're getting to it. Okay, okay. Listen, they had one job, guys. They had one
job.
They had won one game in the final season.
They had to beat
one. Their last game was against the Jacksonville Jaguars, 2-14. However, I'm not making any excuses. They have not won in Jacksonville or on the road versus the Jags since 2014. It does not matter. No one thought they were going to lose, yet they did. So, listen, Carson Wentz threw two interceptions.
He threw one. He threw one, right? No fumble. He had a fumble interception, Charlie.
Okay, okay, listen. Yeah. He never hadn't thrown a road interception the entire season.
I know.
So, Dan, what's right. Listen, I'm having trouble here. Just tell me what's up. Is Carson Wentz to blame for the Colts' loss?
Yes. Yes, Carson Wentz is the reason is to blame for why the Colts lost. But this loss falls. Are you going to give me a hug? We're having a moment. All right.
Dang, bro.
I need you.
He needs this. This is therapy, you guys.
But this is a disrespect hug. This is like, I told you hug.
I know. We go from the Steelers to the Colts.
No,
what do
you know
expect?
What?
This is a growth moment.
Well, it's a growth moment. And also, all the Colts fans were replaying that thing when I walked upstairs
you.
On you.
I know they were killing
because
you.
Because you said the Colts were going to make
quiet, though. I kept quiet. I wanted to be respectful, but I know they were killing you. Carson Wentz is to blame for this Colts loss. I think it's the worst loss in, like, my recent NFL memory, the fact that that happened.
100%.
I think it's probably one of the worst losses in the history of the organization. You don't go down and play a 2-win football team and be a playoff caliber team and have anybody play well, though.
Yeah.
This loss is on everybody within this organization. The offensive line got whooped, 7 sacks. The receivers got no separation. They could not run the football. Their defensive line could not get after Trevor Lawrence, and their coverage unit was poor. Now, Carson Wentz is at the very top of that list. They did not lose this game because of Carson Wentz. But he was brought there to be the reason they won this game
because
of Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
I think Carson Wentz answered the question this year of, can you be a good quarterback again? Yes, I think he played good this year. But they needed him yesterday to be great, and he wasn't. And I said this before. I didn't go on television just to do the television thing and say that I believed and or trusted Carson Wentz just to say it. I did. I truly believed that because of the situation, he was going to get back to playing big-time MVP-level football.
Yeah.
I think there were glimpses of it this year. Not enough. And I think the fact that they went down and lost this game, you can sit there and say, quarterback, you just weren't good enough. And that sucks.
Yeah, and all jokes aside, like we've had fun with it. But when you look at this team, we were trying to figure out what their matchup would be.
Right.
And estimating that whatever matchup or whoever matched up with the Indianapolis Colts would have trouble because of the way they turned the football
over. I thought that was the toughest matchup for the Chiefs.
Exactly. You know, like the way they play defense, they could turn the football over. The way that they could create rush lanes for Jonathan Taylor, having
100%.
The best rusher in the league throughout the 2021 season. And also, after seeing Carson Wentz make those huge throws against the Arizona Cardinals, thinking to myself, okay, that was some glimpses of 2019 Carson Wentz late in the season.
Sure.
You can't go to Jacksonville and play a team that is now going to have the number one overall pick and lose. You just can't. And I agree with Dan. It wasn't a situation. Like, you don't lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars and just have one player not show up.
Right.
Right? You have to not show up in many areas. But Carson Wentz was brought here to take this team to the next level.
Yeah.
For years, we've been saying, since Andrew Luck retired, that the Indianapolis Colts are a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender. And I thought that Carson Wentz was going to be the guy to make that step, and he just wasn't. Mm-hmm. Now, we can't put all of yesterday on him, but the Indianapolis Colts had 2 weeks. right? You beat the Las Vegas Raiders and you get in. We watched the quarterback in Derek Carr make the requisite plays late in the game in Indianapolis to win.
And Wentz did.
Carson Wentz did not.
Right.
We go back to this week, Trevor Lawrence, who was a rookie who hadn't played well in the second half of the season, outplayed Carson.
Best game of the season.
Absolutely. Outplayed Carson Wentz. And that's the issue that the Indianapolis Colts have with their quarterback.
Yeah, well, the Colts, truly, the way you look at it, the Colts went from being a team that no one wanted to see in the postseason to a team that nobody is going to be seeing in the playoffs.
That was TV. Charlie just did freaking TV, baby.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
You're turning.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right now. I'm still a fan.
See what happens when you work with him.
I'm just very disappointed, and it's, you know,
y'all remember
the way we didn't want to see it ending.
Hey, Colts fans, remember y'all was tweeting me that y'all was going to be in the playoffs like 3 weeks ago, and y'all was like, oh, Dan's so smart. RC, you're rude. You don't know how to do TV professionally because you walked up.
Okay, all right.
First off,
it was entertainment. Your bow tie's getting
to your head, Ryan. Second off, I was right, and my bow tie is velvet, and I got velvet on my collar.
It is a beautiful bow tie. Okay, guys, let's keep moving. We have a whole lot to talk about.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yes, sir. Tonight it's the national championship, Alabama-Georgia, with the Bulldogs trying to avenge their loss in the SEC championship, where Heisman winner Bryce Young had a monster game. 421 passing yards, 3 touchdowns passing, and a rushing touchdown. So, Kirby Smart, he knows exactly what his team is up against.
You talk about him as Houdini because he can make people miss. He gets rid of the ball. People don't even account for the number of times this guy has avoided sacks and thrown the ball with no intention of anybody catching it. But he knows where to throw the ball to not take a sack. And when you do that, you're really elite.
Houdini, that's a compliment. Okay, Dan Orlovsky's still here, and our good friend Tim Tebow joining us from Indianapolis. Hey, Tim, I want to start with you here. How much pressure is there on Kirby Smart to beat Bama tonight?
Well, I think there's a lot, and I don't think it's deserved. I think he's one of the best coaches in the country, and he's brought his team to a second national championship. But I think the overall national narrative is that there's a lot of pressure, as if they don't win this game tonight, that when will they have another chance? And I think even going into the college football playoff with the four coaches, I thought he was under the most pressure, which I totally disagreed with. I think he's accomplished more than Luke Fickell, more than Coach Harbaugh, and yet the narrative around him is, well, he can't get over, and Georgia can't get over Alabama. Well, guess what? Very few people have ever gotten over the hump of Alabama. That is extremely hard. So I think he's under a lot of pressure, but I do not think it's deserved pressure. I think he's one of the best coaches in the country. I think he's done an incredible job there at Georgia, and coming from a Gator, that's a lot of high praise.
Well, I think both of those things could be true. I think he's under a ton of pressure as well, Tim. I think it's warranted, though. I mean, it's Georgia. Kirby Smart has had a top 5 recruiting class every single year. They're a phenomenal football team. We all know 3 years ago, Jake Fromm's freshman year, they had the chance to go and win a national championship. Obviously didn't. Very close. This is not the same, and you would know better than I do, this is not the same Alabama team that we've seen over the past decade or something, right, where they're just absolutely dominant. I think we would all agree that this team is somewhat gettable. We've seen it happen, obviously, with Texas A&M this year. Because of the way that they've recruited, how dominant this defense has been, historically good, The fact that you get to play them a second time, I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure. That doesn't mean he's not a great coach. That doesn't mean this is his last and only opportunity. But I think, and you, again, you know better than I do, it's national championship or disappointment, I think, for some programs. Georgia is in one is one of those programs. That's why I think the pressure is incredibly high, and the pressure is probably fair.
Yeah, the standard is incredibly high, but I also believe the failures of the past coaches and the past administration add to the pressure that Kirby's under now because they haven't won a championship in 41 years, which you think about a program like Georgia, the hotbed of recruiting, all the great players that have come through there, and you still haven't won. I think that adds to the pressure right now. But I also don't think that you can put as a knock on him his good recruiting. Like, his recruiting has been unbelievable, but just because he's done that, it can't be, well, you've recruited so well, so you have to be able to do X. I think because he's recruited so well, he has put his team in a chance to compete for multiple championships. And yes, they do eventually have to get over the hump of Alabama, but and this Alabama team is vulnerable, but I don't think we can use it as a knock or more pressure on him. I think they just need to continue to put more resources around him because I think what he's creating is a very sustainable model that not many other in college football have, right? Others have it with the quarterback or flashy receivers. I think he is doing it from the inside out and creating an incredible culture where they could be successful for a very long time.
Well, where some people might disagree with what he's put together is in terms of Stetson Bennett. There's a lot of varying opinions on him. So, Tim, what is your take on Georgia's quarterback?
I mean, I think he's one of the most criticized quarterbacks that's not really deserving of most of it in a long time. I mean, everybody has said for the last 2 years, get JT Daniels in there, get another quarterback. They're a quarterback away from winning a championship. And all this guy does is find ways to win to help his team. The way he played against Michigan was, it was an incredible performance. And this year, he's got the second highest, in the regular season, had the second highest QBR in the country. Like, he is a really, really good quarterback. Is he as good as Bryce Young? No. Is he as good as Matt Corral? No. Are there other guys around the country that are a little bit better? Yes. But it shouldn't take away from Stetson Bennett being a really, really good college quarterback with an incredible story. And by the way, this kid is also a really good athlete that can make plays with his legs to give them a chance. And a lot of people look and say, well, you had the two picks against Alabama. But it was also because their defense was getting run through the entire game, and he forced it a little bit at the end. So I don't think he deserves all the criticism. I think he deserves a lot of praise. He was a walk-on. He came back. He's decided to he loves his university. He's a leader. When you talk to the players on Georgia, they rave about Stetson Bennett. They want to play for him. So when so many people were saying, hey, JT Daniels needs to be the guy, go look at their players. Who do they want to be the guy? And by the way, Kirby Smart and Todd Monken and the coaching staff, they knew that. They knew their players rally around Stetson Bennett over and over and over again. And I think that's something that this team has really kind of galvanized around to say, you know what? Oh, you don't think you can do it? All right, watch.
Yeah, I think he's got to do it. Again, I think it's very similar to Kirby. Like, there's a lot of pressure, but you're the starting quarterback at Georgia, and the expectations are incredibly high. So, Tim, I called the Georgia-Georgia Tech game last game of the season, right? And so, you know, down at games, I walk down to the field pregame, and I'm hanging around, and I'm walking up through the stands, and, like, four Georgia fans stop me, and they're like, we got to talk to you. We got to talk to you. I'm like, what's up? And they're like, we got to play JT Daniels, right? Like, we can't win a national championship with Stetson Bennett. And I was like, no, I think you can. I think he gives you the best chance to win a national championship. To all the points that you said, phenomenal defense.
Chance?
I think he gives them the best chance to win a national championship. I'm not pretending that Stetson Bennett is some freakazoid athlete or some super talented dude. But there's a reason why we all thought this was the best team in college football all season. They're going to play to a physical brand on offense and try to play phenomenal defense. They want their quarterback to be athletic, not hurt the football team, and be timely and clutch. And I think Stetson Bennett has proved that. Now it's time to do it on the biggest stage. Mm-hmm. I'm adamant. I think they can win this game tonight with Stetson Bennett as their quarterback. You pointed out, Tim, he's an incredible story. It really is, the things that he has accomplished tonight. But if they win tonight, I am not going to go on television and go, wow, I'm shocked that they did it with Stetson Bennett. I think he's going to be a piece of that puzzle or the process in beating Alabama.
Well, one thing that's very interesting, he's definitely focused. He said in media availability in the past few days that he actually went out and bought a smartphone from the early 2000s that has no internet capabilities. So he would not be scrolling on his phone, totally focused on the game. So you do got to respect that as far as Stetson Bennett is concerned. Hey, Tim, thank you so very much. Enjoy tonight.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Oh, and these days, you know, it's tough to put really anything past a Giants fan, but somehow Joe Judge managed to still shock everybody with this call. Quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 from his own 4-yard line in the second quarter of a game where the Giants were trailing 3-0. Not to mention, the Giants have a 4-12 record, so here's Judge's explanation for that one.
We were backed up. We had a shot on the play action to get the ball out in the flat. Okay, we got to make the throw and hit the guy right there. Eli was open there. Would have been a good shot coming off the, you know, the goal line there to get us some yardage and get some space. And then ultimately, look, we're backed up. I want to get room. We're going to push it on forward. I wasn't going to live through what happened last week in Chicago. So we're going to give ourselves room for the punt. We did that. We gave ourselves room for the punt. We protected it. We covered well. We played the field position situation I want to play. We held them on the next drive. And that's the way we want to go ahead and play that. Now, do we want to do that all the time we're backed up? No, but that was the situation of the day with where we were. And I want to make sure that, you know, the things that we had issues with last week in Chicago, that was not going to repeat itself.
Okay, so in other words, he was scared. Dan, can the Giants justify bringing Joe Judge back?
Hey, tell me you don't want to win without telling me.
Unbelievable.
I've said unbelievable, I think, about 7 times already this show.
You cannot justify bringing Joe Judge back.
Nope, I agree.
Growing up in sports, you get taught a lot of things. One of the things you get taught really early on, specifically in team sports, is you never do anything to embarrass the name on the back. And you never do anything to embarrass the name on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Giants, your head coach has embarrassed your organization.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you hired him, he stood on a press conference and said that we will play as hard as we can for 60 minutes and we will never disrespect the game.
I think the word he uses is relentless.
That did not happen yesterday. He stood up there and said our play and our style would be representative of this region. That did not happen yesterday.
Yeah.
His own words are not matching his actions. You can't bring him back because when you do, you're telling your players, you're telling your fan base that what you do and what you say do not matter. Just because you have fired a lot of coaches in the past doesn't mean you should keep a coach that is obviously in over his head. Giants fans, I would ask you this. What do you think it feels like walking into the Detroit Lions locker room today or being a Detroit Lions fan?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it feels like hope. I'm telling you, it feels like for the first time in a long time, they're headed in the right direction, that they have a head coach that they believe in, that they have a head coach that their players will play hard for and that they believe in, and that they are going to do everything they can to win football games. Now, ask yourself if you feel that way about Joe Judge. And the Mara family, respectfully, has to ask itself if they feel that way about Joe Judge. And if they don't, they have to move on from him. And if they do, I think they need to come out and tell the Giants fans why.
Yeah, I think the big thing about head coaches is you want who they are and the way that they present to reflect in the team.
Right.
Right. So if you look at Andy Reid, Andy Reid is a player's coach. Andy Reid is a guy that wants you to have fun. Andy Reid is innovative. That's what his team is, right?
Right.
His team is fun to watch. His team is creative offensively. John Harbaugh, this is a guy who was a special teams coach, and now he comes over to the Baltimore Ravens. They always play extremely hard. They're a team that you know their identity in all three phases. The same thing with a guy like Sean McVay, Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick. You could go down the line of what these coaches or what these head coaches present to the public, and then the way that their teams play football matches who their head coach is.
Yeah.
That's not what we get with Joe Judge.
Right.
The guy that we watch or the guy that we listen to stand at podiums and speak to the public is not the dude that coaches the New York Giants.
Right.
This isn't a team that's relentless. This isn't a team that's disciplined. This isn't a team that gives all out effort. This isn't a team that fights. And these are all the things that Joe Judge said and says that this team is and will be. I said it last week when he came out and said, well, you have to think about how much a team believes. You have to think about how much faith they have. Listen, this is not the biblical times. Right. We're not talking about faith. Right. We don't care about the things, the evidence of things not seen and the substance of things hoped for.
That's a good word.
That's not what football is. Football is when I cut the film on, I should know who the hell you are.
Right.
When I cut the film on, I should know how you're being coached. I should know what your week was like based on what it says on game day.
Yeah.
And for the New York Giants, it says y'all suck.
Right.
It says y'all ain't even trying.
RC.
Sometimes.
If you're going to run quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9, why did I come to practice all week?
Right.
Yeah. Why'd you bring me to practice?
There has to be a play for 3rd and 9 when you aren't on your goal line.
Right. You mean 3rd and 9, just hand the ball off to the running back.
Yep.
Or throw a perimeter screen or run a draw. You ran quarterback sneak. There's been over 3,000 3rd and 8+ plays in the NFL this season.
Yeah.
Over 3,000. There was one quarterback sneak.
Yep.
It's an embarrassing move. You cannot explain it. You cannot justify it. I'm just telling you, your locker room is lost. No one believes in the head coach.
Yep.
And there's no way that a free agent is going to sit there and say, I want to go play for him. There's just no way.
And the big thing is this. You constantly speak of never giving up, and you gave up.
Absolutely. I mean, they've given up double digits in 6 straight games. He is their 21st coach in franchise history. I have a feeling, gentlemen, that they will be looking for their 22nd.
I was about to say,
soon. 100%. Okay, let's keep it moving.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.